Traveling Light. Episode 19. First Nisa 850 continued. It felt only fair that I should be the one to accompany Deutschen to the medical centre. After all, I was the one who'd sent her there. Fortunately, the bleeding had mostly come to a stop by the time we reached the lift terminal, so we did not attract too many stares as we went. I had expected Vikaran City to be rather like a station, or perhaps a very large ship, being entirely enclosed as it is. Everything aboard a ship or a space station must be carefully planned in advance to make the best use of limited space and resources, and much the same is true of building underground. But unlike Makeba Station, Vikaran City has had generations over which to slowly grow and shape itself. It sprawls like a surface city, full of twists and turns and little idiosyncrasies born of the whims and habits of its inhabitants. It feels more grown than built, as all great cities do. On Makeba, every path was calculated for maximum efficiency. There were no snickets or alleys to duck through, no shortcuts or hidden entryways. But in Vikaran City, one can improvise, tripping down a tempting side street or turning this corner rather than that. And there is wildlife here with all the unchecked energy that brings. Plants billow out from containers beside the walkways and climb in spiralling tendrils across the shops and residential units that sit in stacks upon each other, row on row. Native creatures from the surface have come in from the cold, finding a strange new home here underground. And there are other animals too, stray pets and their feral descendants trotting down the street or sniffing at the rubbish bins, while in the tangle of pipes and wires above our heads, birds flutter and sing. There is even, I am told, a park further in towards the centre, with trees, real trees. Small trees, but still, trees!
"If you want to go and explore, feel free," said Deutschen. "I can find my way."
No, I said I would come with you, and I will." Deutschen made a noise like she wanted to snort, but wasn't about to risk it.
"Is this about me getting to the med centre in one piece, or you doing penance?"
"We do not go in for penance in my faith. But all the same, I cannot tell you."
"What, how sorry you are? Hasn't stopped you tried?"
"Have I been overdoing it? Sorry. No, I mean, that was to say sorry for apologising too much. I didn't mean..." I scrambled around, desperate for a change of subject. "So, did you know Amman and Wolf were cousins?" Deutschen laughed, obviously entertained by my conversational gymnastics. But she took mercy on me.
"I think I did know that, actually," she said.
"And it's not much resemblance between them," I noted. "I thought they were different species."
"Not quite. Amman's a curvet, and so's Wolf's mum. That's where he gets his size from. His dad's tiny, barely comes up to Wolf's elbow."
This was a delightful image.
"How wonderful."
"Uh-huh. And Wolf is shorter than his mum. They build them big on curvet."
"Have you known them long?"
"Oh, Wolf and Amman? No. We met on the boat, same as you. The university needed a pilot for the Toller, and when they hired Amman, she brought Wolf along. She showed me some family pictures one night, that's all."
"Oh, I see." I fell quiet, letting the silence sit between us. I was reminded of what Hestia had told me on Makeba Station, about how the Toller had come into the university's possession, and how Dr. Deutschen had been the one to suggest the illicit means by which Hestia now sought to pay for the expense. "Do they know? Wolf and Amman, I mean." Deutschen frowned.
"Know what?" I hesitated, trying to find a delicate way of putting it. About what you're using the ship for. Hesiod told me, I said, unaccountably apologetic.
Oh, for God's sake, Hess! Deutron cursed, aiming it upwards as if it might bounce off the ceiling and reach Hestia by echo. So much for keeping stub. Yes, Aman and Wolf know. Everyone knows, apart from you and your gangly friend. And now just them, I suppose.
We had reached the doors of the medical centre, and Deutron rounded on me, fixing me with a fierce look. Between the fire in her eyes and the blood on her face, it was quite effective.
Listen, I don't know what Hestia told you about me, but if you're thinking of dobbing us in it, you do not have to threaten me, Deutron. I'm not threatening you. Trust me, you'll know when I'm threatening you. Is that so? Because you are sounding very threatening.
I took a step closer, holding her gaze. If I were going to dob you in it, I should have done it by now. As it is, I see no reason to make a fuss over something which I frankly do not have any real objection to. And as for what Hestia told me about you, Deutron's expression, which had softened somewhat, went hard and cold as I said this. I pressed on. She did not tell me anything. Not really. All it amounted to was that you have a past, as anyone might. And I do not know whether you care at all, but to be clear, whatever that past might be, it does not change my opinion of you. Deutron tilted her head back, eyeing me warily.
Oh? And what opinion is that?
That you are a basically decent, if startlingly arrogant, person, whom I would not mind getting to know better, should the opportunity present itself. Her mouth twisted, as if she were holding back a smile.
Well, I can work with that.
Good. Now get in there and get your nose fixed so that I can go back to the ship and get some lunch.
Cool. And you stop apologising. You really stop apologising, don't you?
We were not long in the medical centre, and soon enough Deutron was patched up and sent back to the Tola with some painkillers and reassurance that the break should heal on its own in a matter of weeks. I do not know if this is the beginning of a real friendship between us. I am not sure how much of her authentic self I have seen, even in these long weeks of travelling. There is so much swagger to her, it is hard to see where the performance ends and the real person begins. But she showed me a little of her underbelly today, vulnerable and snappish with it. I cannot imagine having a past I wanted to keep hidden. It must be very wearing. Good grief, this letter has taken on a life of its own. I shall keep my next to the scantiest details, mere bullet points, a gesture towards a tale and nothing more. Send my love to everyone. I shall write again soon. Entry NI85001-3. An interview about the use of nanobots in Vakaranite human history. Keywords: community, galactic history, health and well-being, humans, identity, interview, nanobots, nanotechnology, Vakaran, Vakaran City. Notes: since leaving Emeraine, I have felt very attuned to the presence of other humans. Among all the glittering newness of what I have seen on my travels, it is comforting to see something as familiar as my own body reflected back at me. So when I saw an older human woman sitting in the waiting room of the Vakaran City Medical Centre, I was naturally intrigued. She was alone waiting for a routine checkup and was quite happy to chat when I struck up conversation. Her name was Ragna, and she had moved to the city to be closer to her children and grandchildren. She was a small woman, bright-eyed and bony, and upon her arms, her chest and neck, and over one eye, her skin was adorned in blocky geometric patterns of dark ink. After speaking for a while, I offered my compliments on the striking beauty of the tattoos.
Well, now I know you have not been to Vakaran before, Ragna laughed.
I was worried I had made some kind of faux pas, but she reassured me.
But don't fret, my love. You've not caused any offence. But these aren't tattoos. Oh, not just tattoos, anyway. These are nanobots. They're legal here, I asked, astonished.
They'd better be. More than 80% of the human population here has them. And that's down from when I was a girl. It used to be closer to 100%.
I needed to hear her story. I asked if she would be willing to speak for the archives, and once I had bought her a fresh cup of tea from the machine in the corner of the waiting room, she began.
When I was a girl, nobody came to Vicarin. It was a cold, lonely, out-of-the-way little rock that nobody cared about unless they lived here. We had traders, of course, and merchants supplying the city. But nobody came just for the sake of coming. That's all changed now. It's the translator tech that's done it. It used to be that travelling the galaxy was only for people rich enough to hire translators wherever they went, or rich enough to spend half their life learning new languages. But now you and I can sit together and gab away like old friends, and never mind that I've not a clue what language you speak. The galaxy has opened up. Travelling still costs money, of course, but it's not like it was. Back then, people didn't visit Vicarin, and they certainly didn't move here. There were the native people, the Blaske, the Knorras, the Tedoiro and the rest. And there was us, Vicarinite humans. Every one of us descended from the same group of human settlers who arrived here so long ago we barely remember a thing about them. I mean, I say human. If anyone on Vicarin tells you they're 100% human, they're lying, to you or to themselves. But, you know, human enough. Thing is, unlike the Blaske, the Knorras, the Tedoiro and the rest, we weren't evolved for this place. It was too dark, too cold, too wild. We needed a bit of a helping hand. So our ancestors developed the nanobots. Tiny little helpers who could be added directly to the bloodstream and programmed to help keep the human body safe and well in a place it was never supposed to be. Obviously it worked. I wouldn't be sitting here today if it hadn't worked. My ancestors adapted, made Vicarin their home. They became as much Vicarinites as the Blaske, the Thnoras, the Tedoiro and the rest. We became part of the planet. And the nanobots became part of us. Bodies are very efficient machines when they want to be. They won't spend energy doing what they don't have to. Over time, our bodies got so used to the nanobots keeping us in check, they lost the ability to function without them. Without the nanobots, we can't survive. More than that, nanobots are part of our culture. My tattoos don't just keep my body running, heal me when I'm sick or hurt. They tell people who I am, who my people are, the world I live in. When I say we wouldn't survive without nanobots, I don't just mean physically. Vicarinite humans as a culture, as a concept, wouldn't survive without them. We just... and we wouldn't be us anymore. Which is fine on Vicarin. But you know yourself, most places in the galaxy have very strict laws about nanotech, if they haven't banned it altogether. It took me a long time to understand why. To us, nanobots are nothing but good. In thousands of years since coming here, the thought has never arisen in our culture to use this technology for harm. It would be beyond sacrilege. But it is dangerous. I know that, logically. It has the power to alter people on a fundamental level, as my people know all too well. Even with the best intentions behind its use, I can understand people's squeamishness. Unfortunately, that squeamishness leaves my people out in the cold, so to speak. You won't see us again once you leave here. You can't get past the security checks to go off-planet. Nobody dare let us through their ports. It wasn't an issue years ago, when nobody thought of leaving the planet anyway. But I know the young ones are frustrated.
seeing their friends from the Blaske, the Nora, the Tadoiro and the rest, all making the most of opportunities they will never have. There are petitions, campaigns, people are pushing back. Perhaps one day my people will be allowed to see the galaxy just like everybody else. Until then, well, perhaps I'm old-fashioned. Or just old. But one planet's always been enough for me. Travelling Light was created by H.R. Owen and Matt McDyer and is a Monstrous Productions podcast. This episode was written and performed by H.R. Owen. This week's entry to the archives was based on an idea by The Menagerie, with accompanying artwork available on our social media accounts. If you've got an idea for an archive entry, we want to hear it. You can send us anything from a one-line prompt to a fully written entry through our website, by email, or on social media. For more information, see the show notes. If you want to support Travelling Light, please consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also make a one-off donation or sign up for a monthly subscription at ko-fi.com/monstrousproductions. You can now join for as little as £1 a month, with all tiers getting access to bonus art, annotated scripts, weekly blogs, and an invitation to the Monstrous Productions Discord server. And everyone who supports us gets the opportunity to vote on audience decisions. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. The theme tune is by Vinker.